It's about to get real, isn't it? For Jesus, I mean. Maybe for us, if we choose that path. But it's about to get very real for Jesus. Now, speaking of Palm Sunday and the week's events that are to follow, but I'm also thinking about his words today, closing the Sermon on the Mount. If Jesus were the dramatic kind of teacher that I know, he might do this. Sort of close the book. I'm done with my lecture for the day. It's time to close the book on this and step out and do it. The Sermon on the Mount is an interesting place to be during Lent. I find it very challenging, the teachings of Jesus that are very radical, right? You've been with me on this. Loving our enemies, praying for those who persecute us, going the extra mile, embodying the golden rule, the doing unto others as we would have them do unto us, challenging our religious ideas of life together, of community, of marriage, divorce, forgiveness, second chances, peace, making peace in all that we do, practicing nonviolence instead of retaliation. I mean, it's the essence, it's the heart of Christianity, the Sermon on the Mount. What's interesting for me is to think about, and I'm probably going to do this week, is read the rest of Matthew's Gospel, especially with Holy Week in mind. Monday, Thursday, Good Friday, the crucifixion. to read all of that with the Sermon on the Mount in mind. It's kind of what I've been doing and thinking about today as we come to the end of the sermon and the beginning of Holy Week. It's kind of an interesting thing. And Jesus, he says, so everyone then who hears these words of mine and acts on them, key word, acts on them, does it, puts them into action, lets the rubber hit the road. Everyone who does that is like the wise one who built a house on a rock. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house. But it did not fall because it had been founded on rock. Well, guess what? The rain's about to fall. The floods are coming. The winds are going to blow in the life of Jesus in this week that is to come. Think about all that Jesus has to face, the desertion of his friends, the betrayal, the denial, the trial. Everything is about wind, rain, flood, tribulation. It's the lonesome valley that Jesus walks this week. Is he going to slip away? Is he going to be blown away? Is he going to fall and crumble? We will see him crucified, but is that crumbling and being blown away, or is that just more of what it looks like to build your life on the solid foundation of these kind of teachings? I was looking in particular, just to kind of try this out a little bit, what does it look like to read the rest of the gospel with the Sermon on the Mount in mind? So I flipped over to see how Matthew tells the story of Palm Sunday today, the triumphal entry into Jerusalem. And it goes like this. A very large crowd spread their cloaks on the road, and others cut branches from the trees and spread them on the road. The crowds that went ahead of him and that followed were shouting, Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord. Do you hear a beatitude? This is not a beatitude of Jesus. This is a beatitude for Jesus, right? He begins his Sermon on the Mount with the beatitudes of blessed are the peacemakers and the pure in heart and the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Well, Jesus gets his own beatitude. And the people in the streets of Jerusalem cry out, Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord. They draw from the Hebrew scriptures to utter this beatitude, this blessing for the one who has the courage, the audacity to come in the name of the Lord. And he entered Jerusalem, and the whole city was in turmoil, asking, who is this? And that turmoil reminds me of the crowd's response to Jesus' teaching that Drew just read a minute ago. When he finished his teachings, and Matthew gives us, we kind of close the red letter part of the Sermon on the Mount, and we get one sentence that sort of describes the response to Jesus' teachings. And what is that response? The crowds were astounded. They were astonished is the word. The Greek word, I'm told, is more like fearful and panic. It's almost like the people are like saying, like, oh, crap. What is he telling us? What is he asking us to do? The path of nonviolence? The way of love? Not seeking retaliation? Going the way of suffering love like that cross. And so I think about the crowds in Jerusalem in turmoil, and they're saying, who is this? By what authority do you teach, so to speak? And again, that sentence back in Matthew 7, he taught them as one with authority, not like the scribes. Then Jesus entered the temple and drove out all those who were selling and buying in the temple. And he overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold doves. And he said to them, it is written, my house shall be called a house of prayer, but you are making it a den of robbers. I love this next part. Listen to this carefully. The blind and the lame came to him in the temple, and he cured them. But when the chief priests and the scribes, notice that, blind and lame, chief priests and scribes. Are we supposed to make a connection there? Like, you know, there's the blind and the lame, but then there's the really blind and the really lame, the scribes and the Pharisees. The people who are going through the religious motions. The people who have made a mockery of religion. The blind and the lame. Jesus literally upturns their world, turns it inside out, throws it on the ground. I wonder if they're crying out and being upset about their religious liberties being violated today. What do you think? How dare he, this bleeding heart liberal, come into town and violate my religious liberty to practice my faith in the public place? How can he do that to us? Well, guess what? If your religion oppresses other people, you're not doing it right. If your religion lets you sell things like forgiveness, or in this case, you know, animals that you can go through a rite and then get forgiveness. But basically, if your religion creates a business opportunity for you and for me, the opportunity to buy my forgiveness, to create my relationship with God by some meager transaction, guess what? You're not doing it right. If your religion lets you stand in judgment of other people and say, those without sin can come in here, but if you're a sinner, you need not apply. Guess what? You're not doing it right. But if your religion is the very embodiment of the Sermon on the Mount, blessing the poor in spirit, welcoming and walking in the way of peace and nonviolence, if your religion is about forgiveness and compassion, you might be doing it right. And if your religion sort of echoes the teachings of Jesus, who says, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. I don't want your turtle doves and your goats in the sanctuary. Get rid of it. But if instead you are practicing love in everything that you do, then you're doing it right. And those of us who are making a mockery of it by claiming that our religious liberties are being violated by the newest, practices. It's a travesty. Where is Jesus in this journey? Is he celebrating religious freedom? You bet he is. He's just making some very pointed arguments about what religion means. And his religion is about love and welcome and forgiveness. He welcomes us to this table. And the week that's about to follow really just embodies everything that he's done in the Sermon on the Mount. looking his accusers in the eye, not fighting back, not calling in 1,000 angels like, you know, some of the songs say he could have done. You know, he could have called 10,000 angels to his defense. But instead, laying down his life as a sort of act and model of selfless love. That's where the power of God's gospel is for us today. Thanks be to God.